they can take action. They are armed with information that will allow them to go to City Hall, or allow them to go to the county courthouse, or allow them to go to the state legislature and say, we got a problem here, we need to fix it. How are they going to find out about it if not for journalists?
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. In for Vince Petrano, here's Eric Bilstad.
Vince is back next week. Mike Spaulding in the studio today. So journalists from far and wide coming to Milwaukee. And no, I'm not talking about the RNC or anything like that. It's happening right now. Leadership retreat taking place downtown. RTDNA, the Radio Television Digital News Association, is putting this on. And wanted to get an old friend on the radio, the president and CEO of RTDNA, also former WTMJ News Director Dan Shelley, joining us on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline to discuss the challenges, the future of journalism during these very uncertain times. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Welcome back to Milwaukee.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I have one question, though. When Vinny found out I was leaving town, he took the day off, or I was coming to town, he
yes.
took the day off? What's going on?
Yeah, Vince was like, I have no interest in talking to Shelley.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, if you know Vince like you do, he's probably working right now, as far as I know, Dan. He likes to, like, still send the emails and do all the texts, even when he's on PTO.
No, he's a great guy. It's good to be with you.
I should also mention you're the member of the Milwaukee Press Club Hall of Fame. That's the last time you're in the city. So welcome back. So what can I ask first off, like, what brought RTDNA to downtown Milwaukee for this retreat?
Well, it's a great town, as you know, and it's become even greater since I left. No, just kidding. It's become even greater as you guys have been getting ready first for the DNC, and we know what happened in 2020, and now the RNC this year. And we thought there is no better place in the United States right now to gather hundreds of broadcast and digital journalism leaders from around the country to talk about some of the issues that are facing our business today and the challenges we face as we and the reporters and editors and photojournalists who work on behalf of the public every day try to seek and report the truth.
Dan, what are you guys going to be focusing on at the conference this week? You mentioned the major political conventions are going to be in town, but I'm sure the conversations over the years, as the D and RTDNA has stood out more and more, have changed a little bit when it comes to reporting on events like this.
Well, we talked, Mike, about ethics. We're going to talk about, believe it or not, rest and relaxation. A lot of journalists, as many people did during the pandemic, started to get burned out by, you know, you suddenly you were cooped up at home and you were working from home and you were connected to work all the time, 24/7, 365. And that left a lot of journalists kind of burned out. And there's a challenge now in our industry of trying to find the best reporters, the best editors, the best producers, the best news directors and newsroom leaders. And we're going to talk about not just the who, what, when, where, why, not just journalism ethics, but about some of the other factors that go into being able to super serve this polarized society with fact-based journalism.
Former WTMJ News Director Dan Shelley joining us on Wisconsin's Morning News. He's now the CEO and President of RTDNA, holding a leadership retreat here in Milwaukee this week. Dan, have the ethics blurred for journalism over the past few years?
In some senses, yes, but in others, no. I mean, public opinion survey after public opinion survey throughout the years have shown that there is an erosion of trust in the news media in the United States, but it is far less in local media than it is in the national media. And local journalists have an incredibly critical role to play in society because it's the local journalists here in Milwaukee and all the counties and communities around Milwaukee and throughout Wisconsin that still go to school board meetings, that still attend city council and common council meetings, that still report local news of vital interest. And if people know there's a problem in their community because of the outstanding responsible journalism that's occurred, they can take action. They are armed with information that will take allow them to go to City Hall or allow them to go to the county courthouse or allow them to go to the state legislature and say, we got a problem here, we need to fix it. How are they going to find out about it if not for journalists?
Yeah, Dan, that's a really interesting kind of issue that we're facing when it comes to doing this. So much of journalism is based on connections. You know, reporter goes to City Hall and they're in the committee meetings. You get to know people on a real one-on-one basis. And I can remember when I started a dozen years ago, I think I had the cell phone number of the mayor in the community in which I started. Now you can barely get a congressperson on the phone. So it just seems like kind
of a PR strategist.
A lot of PR people. It just comes down to A, you have to find better journalists in a more difficult job market, but B, like the access just isn't seemingly what it used to be.
Yeah, we have seen across the country, and we as an association are extremely active in this area around the country. We've seen a trend nationwide of governments, state and local, trying to become less transparent, not more transparent.
Did we lose you, Dan? You still there? Uh-oh, the government just hung up his phone. They didn't want him talking.
Yeah, I heard a tapping on there.
Cut him off now. Don't let him share any more details. We've been chatting with Dan Shelley, former WTMJ news director and assistant program director here in Milwaukee. He is now based out of New York. He's the president and CEO of RTDNA, the Radio Television Digital News Association. And they're holding a leadership retreat in Milwaukee this week. We got Dan back now. Dan, you were saying we actually wondered if maybe the governments had shut you down because you were just about to break things open for us.
No. There is a trend across the country of less transparency, not more transparency, in local government. And because of that, journalists are needed now more than ever. While there are a lot of great public information officers, or PIOs, who are serving the community, more and more, unfortunately, across the country, PIOs are becoming just public relations arms for the agencies that taxpayers pay for to serve them. And that's not right. So part of what we discuss every day at RTDNA, and it'll probably come up here this week, is what do we do to break through those barriers in a respectful, meaningful way to get the information to the public that they need?
Dan, I remember many, many years ago, you holding like a flip phone or a pager and showing it to me in the newsroom at Radio City and saying, eventually we're going to get all our news from this. That we're going to be watching the local news on this. I'll never forget that. You holding your flip phone and saying, eventually, this will be the broadcast tool that everyone is using. Look into your crystal ball if you could. Where are we going to be 10 years from now, 15 years from now? Newspapers, obviously, we're seeing a struggle there as they try to find ways to have revenue. Obviously, radio and television are fluid at times as far as revenue base there. How are we going to be consuming our news, and what platform is going to be strongest?
Well, I hope the rest of that sentence back in the day at Radio City was people will be getting their news on a device such as this phone, but there will still be a need for local journalists, regardless of what platform on which they're seeking and reporting the truth on behalf of the public. Because without local journalists who are part of the community, by the way, local journalists, you go to the same grocery stores as your neighbors. Some of you attend the same houses of worship as your neighbors. You are in this business because you want to make this community better. And that's what journalism is all about. And irrespective of platform, regardless of how people choose to consume the information, it will be journalists who are there to provide it in a fact-based manner. To quote Carl Bernstein, the Watergate-era Washington Post reporter, to get the best obtainable version of the truth and pass it on to the public so that the public can make changes in their community to make it better.
He taught me how to be skeptical. Dan Shelley, former WTMJ News Director and Assistant Program Director, now the CEO and President of RTDNA, in town for a leadership conference. Dan, welcome back to Milwaukee. So good to talk to you.
Thank you. It's great to be home. Nice to speak with you, Eric. Hi, Mike.
MPS has one hurdle cleared. The district has submitted an updated draft for corrective action dealing with its finances. They've sent that to the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. So it appears that this plan is a little bit more detailed and a little bit more real, I should say, versus a couple of drafts that were submitted last week that the DPI was very critical of. So this plan is designed to facilitate the release of the district's general and special aid payments, also identify some of the challenges that they're dealing with as they try to figure out these audited financial issues. As of now, staffing issues is one of the problems. They have at least a dozen vacancies in the MPS Office of Finance. And the top one is also going to be open. They're going to look for an interim CFO. They're also looking for a superintendent as well. Plan also calls the current MPS financial system uniquely configured, saying it's not user-friendly or understandable, which makes it very difficult to wade through. And I think that was part of the issue that everyone was having with this. So you may recall that a comptroller in the city of Milwaukee was offered up to the district last week. That Mayor Cavalier Johnson held a news conference on Friday saying, hey, I don't want to be in control of the district, but we do want to help. So what they did is they offered the district to use the city comptroller and that he could be there for advice. He could add any insight, you know, insight on financial issues. And it appears that that has been utilized here as they continue to move forward now and have sent this action plan to the DPI. Johnson also said, even though he wasn't interested in being the top decision maker when it came to the district, the mayor did mention that he would like to be involved.
As they're doing a national search for superintendent, when that field is winnowed down to the finalists, I want to have conversations and be a part of that interview process with whomever the superintendent finalists are. I want to have a say in that.
Want to be... What's it in the room where it happens? In the room where it happens?
Part of the conversation.
Yeah. So would the mayor ever take control? And by the mayor, I'll say just any mayor in the city of Milwaukee. Would this be a thing that would ever be considered? Well, it has been done before, and it's worked in other cities similar to Milwaukee. In Cleveland, Aaron Churchill is an Ohio research director for the Thomas Fordham Institute. He was on Wisconsin's Afternoon News on Tuesday, and he discussed how Cleveland, the mayor there, appoints the school board. That's different than electing one, obviously. And by having that mayor in that leadership role, they've seen success in Cleveland.
When a mayor is sort of the figurehead of your school district, it does put a singular person in charge, and it gives him or her the responsibility to oversee a fiscally sound school system, one that's working to improve academics for all the kids in the community, one where you can even bring in different types of stakeholder groups than you could with a traditional arrangement. You can bring a business community in, probably a little easier. You can bring in your schools of choice that aren't necessarily run by the school district into that fold. The mayor has sort of this broader mandate to improve your city, and education is a big part of that.
And Churchill tells Wisconsin's Afternoon News they've seen success. Truancy is down in Cleveland, and test scores are up. Not happening here, but it is something that has had success elsewhere. 8:31, your headlines next. President Biden is flying to Italy today for the G7 summit, which is taking place. This after spending the night in Delaware following the conviction of his son Hunter Biden in that gun case out of Delaware. Much to get to here. We have the sentence, and we have a little bit more on how the president is reaction. And then this, the jury, they spoke for 3 hours. They deliberated about 3 hours over 2 days, and it was tight for a bit.
Moments after the verdict, I met with juror number 10 in the garage. He revealed a remarkable scene inside the jury room when they started deliberating. A jury split right down the middle, 6-6.
Believe it or not, it was a split vote.
6-6.
6-6.
That was the first vote.
That was the first vote.
But all that changed when they talked it over. Juror 10 says Hunter Biden knew he was an addict when he filled out that background check.
ABC's Terry Moran. Now, Hunter now faces 25 years behind bars. That's the max. after being convicted of, basically, he lied on a form to buy a gun when he indicated he was not a drug addict. He checked saying he's not a drug addict, but prosecutors believe that he was on drugs at the time, and the jury believed that as well. ABC's Rachel Scott on the president's reaction.
Sources close to the president say that he's not worried about the political cost here, that this is deeply personal to him. He acknowledges that his son, Hunter, has battled with addiction and that he's made it out on the other side, noting that it's something that many American families go through. But the president has also kept his distance from this case while also making it clear that he will absolutely respect the outcome of this verdict.
So the question now is the sentence. He'll be sentenced before the election in November, looking at 25 years, but no one really thinks he'll get that much, if any time, behind bars. ABC's Dan Abrams.
It's going to be interesting to see whether the special counsel even asks for any prison time. When you listen to his press conference and you read between the lines, it sounded like he may not even ask for prison time. That'll be a critical question, is what does he decide to request from the judge?
Everyone seems to think that prison time is unlikely, yeah, given first offense and whatnot. We should also point out, too, though, Biden does have another case that he's going to be dealing with. He's going to be on trial on tax charges in California. That's scheduled to begin in September. It's 8:41. Wisconsin's Morning News, Eric Bilstein, along with Mike Spaulding. So, Mike, it was 30 years ago today. 30 years since Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman were murdered in L.A.
If Nicole Brown Simpson were alive today, she would have been 65 years old. Ron Goldman would be 55. It was a murder case the world watched.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
So many years after the murders, Nicole's sisters talking to our Diane Sawyer about what she would be like today.
Oh my gosh, what would she look like?
Beautiful.
I know.
She'd be fit.
Ron Goldman's family members are still fighting for money they never received from a civil judgment against O.J. Simpson.
ABC's Alex Stone. Yeah, they're still waiting on $33.5 million that they never got. As far as that case, holy cow, everyone paid attention.
In terms of the legacy of the O.J. case, I think it'll always be remembered, literally, for being one of the trials of the century, where America got a stark look of what's happening in the courtroom.
So that is Lori Levinson. She's a Loyola Law professor and former federal prosecutor. So she was talking about this being the trial of the century. And it got us talking. Pancake brought this up. Okay, well, what's a trial in this generation that fits that mold? Is there any in the past 30 years or past 15 years that fits that mold? And, Mike, we did get some interesting ones on the WDTMJ Talk and Text line, 855-616-1620. Someone suggested Aaron Hernandez, and you brought that one up. He's the tight end, the New England Patriots tight end, right? That was a murder trial.
Yes, he was convicted of murder, yes.
And he's no longer with us himself. That one, yeah, but did that have the same sway?
I don't think so. And one thing that really jumped out to me with OJ is I was just doing a little crack research here this morning. 150 million people tuned in to watch the verdict read on television. That would have been October 3rd.
Isn't that amazing?
123 million people every year watch the Super Bowl.
Right.
Which is like far and wide the most watched, most consumed piece of media by the monoculture that is the USA. So more people watch the OJ verdict than watch the Super Bowl.
So that in itself is incredible. So it's hard to even find a comp.
Yeah.
Because any comp is not going to be even close to that. However, we did get some other suggestions. Someone else brought up Michael Vick, a former NFL player. Now he's a commentator, podcaster. He had his issue because he had the, he was mistreating dogs and pit bulls. Someone suggested Tiger Woods, although I don't know if he was never, that was more of a scandal than
I think civil trial maybe because he got divorced, but yeah.
Kobe Bryant was brought up. Mm-hmm. He had that situation out of Colorado. But then this one was texted to us, and I thought this was a fascinating suggestion for a trial that just caught the attention of a generation, maybe not all generations. And that's the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Remember that when they sued each other? This was just this past year. That trial, which went on forever, got a lot of attention from people who use TikTok. There was people like doing investigations of their body language, whether or not Amber Heard was on drugs at the time. What were they, how were they reacting when the lawyers were speaking? All of this was caught up and documented nonstop on social media. So though, even though Johnny Depp may not be one that you would think is on that list, as far as we trend, as far as we look at our new way of, I don't know, consuming court cases, that one's got to be on there. You could argue the former President Donald Trump one of just recent. That one's different only in the sense that it didn't have that. You didn't have the cameras in there. Now, granted, yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not historic or anything like that. Did it capture the attention that some of these other ones have?
No, and I can imagine if there were cameras in the courtroom or audio from the courtroom when that verdict was being read, tens and twenties of millions of people definitely would have tuned in. But yeah, I think the lack of camera, lack of media in federal court, it hampered the, the omnipresence of that one.
Ooh, here's a good one. Casey Anthony. Remember that? The young mom?
Yeah,
out
that's
of Florida,
a good one.
Florida?
Not a good one, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox.
She was just back in the news not that long ago.
I feel like Casey Anthony, though, really like enraptured the country.
And that went a lot. I mean, I think a lot of people just assumed she was guilty there.
Yeah.
And she was found not guilty, which surprised folks, right? Wasn't she acquitted?
Yeah. One, I think, would you could make the arguable case that the Casey Anthony trial started like our obsession with true crime. I think OJ and Nicole Brown Simpson, yes, it's true crime, but that one went, I think, beyond it. Whereas Casey Anthony was almost exclusively told through newspapers and tabloid headlines. Obviously, there was a lot of that in the OJ right. case, but it didn't have the same cachet because she didn't have the same cachet. Again, we talked about OJ's popularity in the culture from his NFL career, college career, Heisman Trophy
winner.
Yeah,
transcended sports.
Yeah, actor, movie star, actor, you know, Hollywood A-lister.
George Floyd on the WTMJ Talk and Text Line, 855-616-1620. The Menendez brothers. This one locally, I agree with this one from Ken in Heartland. He says, what about the Waukesha parade trial? Locally, absolutely. I don't know if it had the same effect across the country. It was paid attention to. The national news did cover it, but did it get the same attention that it did get locally? It's just interesting. It's been 30 years in that trial. That situation with O.J. Simpson still lingers. I mean, we just had the Nicole Brown Simpson family. They were doing the rounds on the networks a week ago or 2 weeks ago, probably leading up to this situation with the anniversary. O.J. Simpson dying, O.J. Simpson being in jail. I mean, there's so much that's happened with him over the past 30 years that we've followed so closely.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit about, is this the third act of the O.J. Nicole Brown Simpson?
Ooh, good question.
Trial, turbulations, its place in popular culture, because as you mentioned, O.J.'s gone. Nicole Simpson obviously gone. Ron Goldman gone. And 1994 was a really long time ago. Like people
30
that,
years ago.
I mean, think about it. People born in 1994 are turning 20 years old, right? Yeah. I mean, they're going on with their lives. So people in college where this was such a hot topic weren't even born when it happened.
Right.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
Wisconsin's Morning News wrapping up here. Boy, the number of cases now coming in because of the 30 years since Nicole Brown Simpson's murder, we are asking what other trial was anywhere near the O.J. Simpson trial, especially in the newest generation. And I thought Johnny Depp, the Amber Heard trial, I thought that was a pretty good suggestion on the WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Mike, we got some other ones here. Phil Spector, R. Kelly, Lance Armstrong, Scott Peterson,
George
Gabby Petito,
Zimmerman.
George Zimmerman.
That one, that one's close, I feel like.
Interesting. I thought that was very creative. That Johnny Depp idea, that might be the one that caught the attention of the most of the, especially the youngest generation. Hey, the forecast sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating. Sunny and warm today. There is a chance for storms this evening, a high of 85. The low tonight is 70 with that rain possible. Then tomorrow, humid, a high of 86, slight chance for showers. So be careful, Milwaukee. We're going to see bioluminescent sea creatures on our shores this summer. Yes, Art Blaze on the Beach is coming. Pretty neat. Art Plays on the Beach is a series of free beach parties that kick off in July that are going to light up the summer nights. Steph Salvia helps run it.
It's actually going to be probably as much of a surprise for me as it is for everyone else. We do have local artists from Buzz Pop Workshop working on giant sea creatures that they are calling cephalopods that will be painted in crazy colors. And, you know, we're talking like 45-foot tentacles and that sort of thing.
So these huge things are going to be on the beaches there at Bradford, also at South Shore. Perfect opportunity to see something cool and see some art and also enjoy the beautiful weather we will have in July. Much more details throughout the day on Art Blaze coming to Milwaukee. It's 8:57. The Political Power Hour is next.